Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue today is sexual abstinence, particularly for teenagers, in light of the interview on Fox News Channel by Bristol Palin, the 18-year-old daughter of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, and also the grandmother, that is to say that Sarah Palin is now the grandmother of little Tripp, who is the son of her 18-year-old daughter. Bristol Palin made comments to Fox News Channel. This is the 18-year-old mom, saying, unwed mom, saying that she believed that teenagers should not have sex. But she went on and she said that sexual abstinence is, quote, not realistic at all for teenagers. Now, in a strange and yet very important way, I agree with her. I agree with her that it's not realistic for many teenagers. And it ought to be realistic. That's the point. It is the responsibility of parents to make it realistic. It's the responsibility of teenagers to make it realistic in their lives. The reality is, the reason why it is not realistic, if we're going to use that word, for so many teenagers is because once you get into the hooking up culture of the modern maelstrom of teenage sexuality, of course sexual abstinence is unlikely and it's unrealistic. The reality is that we can't let our kids get drawn into the vortex of that sexual confusion in the first place. It's our responsibility as parents to make sexual abstinence realistic. And that's going to require intervention, that's going to require protection, that's going to require a different set of expectations than what the vast majority of American teenagers face. I want you to call and join the conversation at 877-893-8255. We began this conversation a little bit yesterday. I just made some introductory comments. I posted an article at my website at albertmohler.com entitled The Palin Parable. Bristol Palin says sexual abstinence not realistic at all. And I've had an enormous response to that article. I've already done some other interviews and conversations in the media on other programs, but now it's time to talk about it on the Albert Mohler Program. Because the big issue for parents, the take-home lesson for parents in this, is that it is our responsibility to make sexual abstinence realistic. It is an abdication of responsibility for us just to accept that it's not realistic. Even though in the lives of most teenagers, if we're just honest, it's not. It's not realistic. It's not realistic as an expectation. But the Christian responsibility is not to decide what's realistic in terms of the moral context, but rather to understand what we're called to in terms of the biblical mandate, the biblical command, and the biblical ideal. We're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Mohler Program. Again, I'd love to hear from you. You can follow us at Twitter. Just follow us at Mohler Radio. You can go to Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. You can, of course, write us at mail@albertmohler.com, and best of all, you can call us. Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. How have you been talking to your kids about the Bristol Palin interviews? Getting a lot of attention. How would you answer your neighbor who says to you, see, sexual abstinence doesn't work? Put quotations around the words, doesn't work. What do you say when someone comes up to you and says, how are you going to defend your expectation of sexual abstinence for your teenagers and young adults who are unmarried, when the world sees what Bristol Palin saw, which is sexual abstinence is just unrealistic? That's the way they look at it. The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, I want to look at some other issues in the news. Alan Goldberg is out with an op-ed piece, an editorial for the Los Angeles Times. And, you know, earlier we've been talking about this whole issue of designer babies. And the age of the designer baby is upon us right now. You had this Wall Street Journal article that I wrote about and we talked about on this program that is just announcing that there are fertility clinics ready to use screens in order that parents can say, I want an embryo that has these traits and does not have those traits. And the big issue there, and we saw this in the Wall Street Journal article, also we saw this in terms of our conversation with the guest we had on this program, we saw that there is an effort right now to say, here's a distinction, there are medical screens and there are non-medical screens. And I want you to follow the logic here very, very clearly, because this is the logic I went at and sought to really expose in the conversation just a few days ago. The idea here is that medical screens would be just fine, okay. But non-medical screens are wrong. That's where a lot of people are trying to draw the line. That was the controversy in the news article. It wasn't over any kind of screening. It was over screening for what you might call matters of mere parental preference, hair color, gender, etc. And it seems that the consensus out there in the secular ethical world is that medical screening's just fine, but parental preference screenings for non-medical reasons would be wrong. That's the take of Alan Goldberg in this editorial in Los Angeles Times. He says something stinks about reproductive medicine in Southern California, and it doesn't involve eight dirty diapers. Recently, the Los Angeles-based Fertility Institute announced that it would soon be offering patients in its clinics the chance to choose traits such as eye color, hair color, and complexion. The clinics already offer gender selection to patients undergoing in vitro fertilization. It goes on to explain the new services that this fertility clinic wants to offer. But it comes on and says here that this man thinks it's simply wrong. And he goes on to talk about all kinds of things that involve a very, very difficult case that he brings up here. And, in fact, he talks about his own son, born with a rare and fatal genetic disease known as Fanconi anemia. And it's really, really clear that now he wishes that that perhaps there could have been something otherwise through pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. But, you know, I'm really, really uncomfortable with this whole article. Let me tell you. He goes on to praise this child. He says, Henry, who died at the age of 7, was among the most optimistic, wise, and courageous people I ever met. We felt a great responsibility to do everything in our power to save his life. In the end, that wasn't possible. But our efforts contributed to scientific knowledge, and for that we are grateful. Abusing that hard-won knowledge to capriciously choose hair color, eye color, and all other cosmetic traits in a baby is wrong and repugnant. Well, let me tell you what's wrong and repugnant. With all due respect to this man, he's really implying that he thinks screening should have screened his child out because of the medical problem he had. Undoubtedly a devastating diagnosis, Fanconi anemia. The boy lived only to the age of 7. But my argument is that if you really understand what's going on here, if you really understand the sanctity of every single human life from the moment of fertilization until the moment of natural death, you'll understand that screening out for any reason is wrong. And I'm going to reject once again, and this editorial affords me the opportunity in an unexpectedly powerful way, to deny this bifurcation into supposedly medical reasons and non-medical reasons, because selecting out an embryo for any reason is saying to a human being, we won't have you. We don't want you. And even though I'm sure there are parents who would be more readily eager to do that on the basis of a medical diagnosis, there are parents right behind them who clearly would be ready to do it on the basis of eye color. And that's the frightening new world that we're not just facing somewhere in the indefinite future, but right before our eyes. Meanwhile, the New York Times is reporting today in a story by Ronnie Karen Rabin that screening for rare genetic disorders is now routine in newborns. Routine. Here's the lead. When David Swift's baby girl Gianna was born at Santa Monica UCLA Medical Center 6 years ago, a nurse approached to ask if the baby could participate in a pilot program to screen newborns for dozens of rare genetic disorders. But now it goes on, it goes on, it goes on. There are now 29 disorders recommended for testing. The March of Dimes is promoting this testing and affords at its website a list of the tests. And again, let's face it, the implication of all of this is you abort when you find this kind of diagnosis in a fetus, or you discard the embryo when you find it through pre-implantation genetic diagnosis in an embryo. That's really scary. Big Fight Coming USA Today says over issues of conscience and abortion in the last weeks of the Bush administration, President Bush and officials of that administration put in place a new set of regulations that would honor the, quote, rights of conscience, end quote, which would allow medical personnel to opt out of certain procedures. And that opting out is on the basis of their conscience over the question of abortion. Now, the Obama administration is being asked and pressured to revisit those regulations to see exactly whether or not this administration intends to rescind what the Bush administration had done. You can see where the pressure is coming from. Cecile Richards, president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, said, quote, this is the last gasp of the Bush administration giving a lift to the extreme right, end quote. The extreme right, that's really interesting, because the people profiled in this article are people like pharmacists who do not want to dispense as a matter of their conscience something like RU486, something like the morning after pill, which is an abortifacient. You know, this is where a group like Planned Parenthood really shows its hand. When anyone who believes in the sanctity of human life is simply written off as a representative of the far, far extreme right. You know, this is where the left just doesn't get it. The sanctity of human life is not a negotiable issue. It's not like we can say, all right, we can negotiate it away to this point and feel satisfied with that. And when the conscience of medical personnel are here involved, it would be a matter of an absolutely draconian, evil coercion of conscience to require persons who believe in the sanctity of human life to cooperate actively in abortion in any form. Back to talk about how to make sexual abstinence realistic for young people on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're talking about the interview that Bristol Palin, the 18-year-old daughter of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, gave to the Fox News Channel. She, of course, is also the mother, the 18-year-old unwed mother of a little baby named Tripp. And, you know, Americans really came to understand this family's struggle with this crisis in a most awkward moment for the family. It was even as Governor Palin was being named as the running mate for Senator John McCain as they were running together at the top of the Republican ticket for president and vice president of the United States. I thought, honestly, the Palin family dealt with it about as well as could be expected in the glare of that kind of national publicity. I was very thankful for the pro-life witness that they gave, even as the parents, in this case, the governor and her husband, had given a very clear, powerful pro-life witness in the birth of Trigg, the little boy who's almost a year old now, born with Down syndrome. They knew he had Down syndrome when she was carrying him in the womb, and they refused to abort him. Great pro-life witness. It was very, very moving to see that little baby boy in the hands of, and most, I think, compellingly, in the arms of his big sister there during the Republican National Convention. Millions of people saw that little baby, and they saw the glory of God and the fact that he had come to life. And there was a great refutation of the lie that is represented in the fact that now so many babies are, it's a lie against the image of God, seen in the fact that so many babies with Down syndrome are now routinely aborted, the vast majority of them, as a matter of fact. So I'm very thankful for that pro-life witness. But, you know, on the issue of teenage sexual activity and sex before marriage, well, I mean, you had a graphic demonstration of what that looks like in terms of a moral issue faced by a family in the Palin family this past summer. Now you have the baby being born, I believe, on December the 27th of last year, a healthy little boy named Tripp. And now you've also got the interview that Bristol Palin gave Fox News. And in it, she said some things that really require our conversation. Let's just listen for a moment as she speaks.
Teen pregnancy, what's your thought on that?
I think everyone should just wait 10 years.
That's just, why?
Just because it's so much easier if you're married and if you have a house and career, and it's just so much easier.
I don't want to pry too personally, but I mean, I say contraception is an issue here. Is that something that you're just lazy about or not interested in, or do you have a philosophical or religious opposition to it? Or
no. I don't want to get into detail about that, but I think abstinence is like the, I don't know how to put it, like the main... Everyone should be abstinent or whatever, but it's not realistic at all.
Why?
Because I don't want to get into detail about it.
Well, without you being personal, just big picture, not necessarily about you. But
because it's more and more accepted now.
Among your classmates and kids your age?
Yeah, among kids my age.
How do you change that?
To see stories like this and to see other stories of teen moms and just, it's something that's, I don't know, just you should just wait 10 years and it'd just be so much easier.
All right. There's a lot of confusion there. And let's just set a couple of things very clearly. Number one, you're talking about an 18-year-old girl there. In reality, she probably even shouldn't be in this situation where she's talking on the national news to Greta Van Susteren there and the Fox News Channel about issues that are both personal and public. But she volunteered, as it turns out, for this interview, actually asked for it, saying she wanted to set the record straight. She is legally an adult. She has the right to do that. And for that, she also takes responsibility for what she said. And what she said is a jumble of confusion. Just to knock some things out of the way for our conversation here, she said that she would have a word to teenagers, and that is, don't have sex, so wait 10 years. Well, let me just point out that the Bible doesn't say wait until 10 years after you're a teenager to have sex. It says have sex when you're married and not outside of marriage, period. The issue here is marriage, not age. Now, clearly, at 10 years beyond 18, you're going to be more mature. She mentions a job and income and marriage and things like that. But, you know, and she means having a spouse as in being helpful. She doesn't actually mention marriage as a moral issue. So we got that confusion. Let's just knock that out of the way. Then we also have what she says about absence. She says it's not realistic. And, you know, she gets very awkward there in the way that an 18-year-old who thinks the question is about her own sexual experience, that's clear, gets awkward. And Greta Van Susteren says, we're not talking about you. Let's just talk about the big question. And she still isn't very coherent. But she says sexual abstinence, given the fact that sex is more popular now and all the rest, just isn't realistic at all. I shocked some people overnight when I wrote an article saying I agree with Bristol Palin. It's not realistic. It's not realistic. Abstinence as a goal is not realistic for most teenagers. And the reason is that they put themselves in situations where you're more likely to have sex than not. Realistic is not the moral question here. The moral imperative is that we are commanded by God to limit sex to the monogamous covenant union of marriage, period. The reality is that the Bible teaches that we are not to engage in sexual relations outside of marriage, period. And certainly the word to young people, teenagers and young adults is no sex until you're married. Sex then only inside the covenant of marriage. That's easy to understand. You don't have to have some kind of PhD in human sexuality to figure that out. You don't need a PhD in biblical interpretation to figure that out. The Bible doesn't say do what's realistic. The Bible says do what's right. And here's a basic issue in the Christian life. Our responsibility is not to decide what is realistic for us and say, okay, then that's what I'm going to aspire to. For the vast majority of American teenagers, it's clear that sexual abstinence is not realistic because in the maelstrom of today's hooking up adolescent sexuality culture, sexual abstinence is certainly not realistic. It's not realistic. And here's the issue where I think it got kind of uncomfortable here for Ms. Palin. Once you get into a situation where sex is likely to happen, it's likely to happen. You've got to get into a situation as a young person, and it's a parent's responsibility to create the structures that would make sexual abstinence realistic. And that means certain expectations, certain rules, certain patterns, certain structures, certain supervisions to prevent this from happening. You just give your teenager over to the hooking up dating culture of American adolescents, then guess what? Yes, sexual abstinence is unrealistic. If you just throw your kids into the college campus where the hooking up culture is celebrated with constant parties and drinking and what amounts to just a culture of sexual irresponsibility and immorality, then yes, of course, sexual abstinence is not realistic at all, to quote Sarah Bristol Palin. But it's not a parent's responsibility to decide what's realistic. It's the parents' responsibility to make the right things realistic. And I have some suggestions about that as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We have callers on the line. We're going to get to those calls in just a moment. We're also glad to hear from you by other means. Let's go to Lenore, North Carolina. Melissa is listening on the World Wide Web. What do you think, Melissa?
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I agree with what Bristol Palin was saying in the sense that we create an unrealistic goal for teenagers, especially as Christian adults and in the church, when we give them the goal of abstinence alone, when our goal should be a lifestyle of purity, starting with the heart, knowing that our actions flow out of our heart. So we need to address more than just this one physical act. Our goal is a much higher standard of purity of thought and mind and deed.
Melissa, you have thought this through in a way that's distinctively Christian. I want to underline the fact that what you just said about a total lifestyle aimed toward the glory of God and the holiness to which Christians are called, that is an entire lifestyle and worldview that makes sense only if you understand that we have a Creator who, for our good and for His glory, has established certain structures, rules, and regulations that point us toward what is actually best for us. And yes, you're exactly right. The goal here is purity. The requirement of purity is boundaries. And that's a good place for us to talk when we come back on the Albert Mueller Program. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue of sexual abstinence in the background of this is Bristol Palin's interview, the 18-year-old unwed mother of young Tripp Palin, the daughter of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. She gave an interview, and you heard it if you were listening to the program just moments ago, as she was speaking to Greta Van Susteren on the Fox News Channel. She said that teenagers ought not to have sex. She said it in kind of a muddled way, however. But then she came back and she said she believes in sexual abstinence, but it's not realistic at all. And what we're talking about is the fact that, of course, it isn't realistic at all in a teenage sexuality culture that just assumes that teenagers are going to have sex, in a culture that says that teenagers should be free simply to hook up with one another for romantic liaisons, a culture in which it says that pair dating at whatever age is normal, to put a boy and a girl together in this situation without supervision, that that's just normal. The reality is that sexual abstinence before marriage is not realistic for most teenagers because their authorities have not made it realistic. My argument is that it is the responsibility of Christian parents to make it realistic. I'd love to hear how you're handling this, perhaps as parent, youth pastor, how you're handling this, teenager, young adult, in terms of thinking about this, how this whole question looks to you. And my point is that the word realistic here is helpful only in revealing just how big a challenge this is. But I just want to remind us all that the Christian moral principle here is not realism, to decide what appears to be realistic to us. It is rather to understand that we have to live in such a way that what the Bible reveals about God's plan for our lives has to be made realistic. It is our responsibility to make certain that sexual abstinence is realistic. I was asked on an interview about this afternoon, a very straightforward question by a radio interviewer who had read my article and wanted to talk about it. He said, "All right, how can you be absolutely certain that two young people won't have sex?" And I said, "Well, here's the deal, and I know this is going to sound really, really, really radical, okay? But if they're not alone together, they're not going to have sex, okay? You just put that in an equation. I think you can take that to the bank. If they're not alone together, they're not going to have sex. Are you saying that 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds shouldn't be about pair dating where they spend a lot of time alone in a car, much less in another context alone? Yes, I want you to hear me. That's exactly what I'm saying. Hear me to say it very, very clearly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Are you saying I can't just let my kid go to the party and hang around with the other kids? Yeah, if you know what goes on in a lot of those parties, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, in the older day of a courtship culture, the boy and the girl, the young man and the young woman, were not alone except under the most unusually supervised situations where at least there was a very clear expectation of what was going on, where they would be, what they'd be doing, and where they're going to be when, and where they're going to show up when, and how that's going to happen. And not this kind of laissez-faire hooking up culture we've got now, in which, of course, it's unrealistic to think there'll be sexual abstinence. It's unrealistic to think that once sexual activity is likely to happen, it won't happen. You've got to reach this before it reaches that point. We have to protect our kids, put structures and expectations in place so that they do not reach that tipping point. The phone number for this conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Again, 877-893-8255. I'm very glad to have heard from some at Twitter, and you can follow us there at Mohler Radio. One young woman wrote in to say it is realistic, but is it realistic for people without religious reason? And I want to come back and say probably not. Good question. It's probably not realistic for people who do not believe they're called to holiness. If people do not believe that they are called to a higher plane, that they are called and commanded to aim themselves for marriage, then yes, they're probably going to have premarital sex. I think that's probably true. And so that's why, again, Christian parents have a responsibility that other parents might think they have in some generalized sense. I think there are very few parents still who say, you know, go out and have sex to their teenagers, but they're simply not driven by the concern, the spiritual concern for their children that certainly Christian parents must be driven by. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We got lots of callers on the line. We're going to get in as many of those calls as possible. We have also heard from Gmail. Jason wrote in to say, you know, I agree with you, but this means that we should be very, very open to people getting married at younger ages. And, you know, Jason, I got to tell you, if you've been listening to this program, you know that's my song. The delay of marriage is one of the major issues that is fueling sexual promiscuity. There's simply no doubt about it. I think it's just simply irrefutable. And, you know, I get a lot of heat when I suggest that if people are ready to have sex, they're clearly ready to have marriage. And I don't just mean physically, because unfortunately these days the reality is it's getting younger and younger. I'm not suggesting that 14-year-olds are ready to get married, even though their bodies may be ready for sex. I'm suggesting that that's why you have parents, to make sure that the wrong thing doesn't happen until the right thing is well timed to happen. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue is sexual abstinence, and boy, did Bristol Palin just put it on the agenda for the entire nation of this interview she gave. She's got an enormous platform. Very few 18-year-old girls or young women have that kind of platform. She has it. She has it because she is the daughter of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, but she also has it because she became what is almost surely the world's most famous and well-known unwed mom as a teenager, when it was discovered and announced just as her mother was being nominated to be the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party this past summer, that she was pregnant as an 18-year-old with also a teenage father and a great pro-life witness, and that the family came together and said they were going to bring this baby to life. They're going to receive it as a gift, and they were just very candid about the situation. But now Bristol Palin's gone on the television in a voluntary interview she gave to Fox News Channel, and boy, I think she really put the issue accidentally straight. She's very confused in what she had to say, but what she had to say actually puts the issue right straight before us. She said that sexual abstinence is not realistic for most teenagers, and my response is she's exactly right. But the issue for us is not to say, well, all right, it's not realistic, so give up. The issue for us is to say, what do we as Christian parents have to do to make it realistic? It's our job to make sexual abstinence before marriage realistic by our expectations, by our teaching, by the structures we put into place, by our supervision and our authority, and shame upon us if we fail in that responsibility. And I say that, you know, understanding that, you know, when you start looking at the realism question, the fact is that most teenagers today are in a sexually charged environment in which sexual activity is more likely than not. But that's the problem. And it's even more of a problem if we let our kids be in that same context. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Greenville, South Carolina. Ben's listening on XM170. Go ahead, Ben.
Hi, the realism comments are just right on target. They work. They're successful. I have two children that are grown to prove it. One's in college now, the other is engaged, and he has yet to kiss his bride. But we made choices when they were coming along about their peer groups and about the authorities in their lives with the schools and the churches that we went to, and we made it realistic, and it's just been a tremendous blessing.
Now, Ben, I need your help here, so please hang with me a minute. I want to ask you, you called, and I hope I'm not taking advantage of you here to ask a very personal question, but you were talking about your kids. I'm assuming that this means that you saw it as your job to keep them from situations in which sex was likely.
Absolutely. I mean, if that's not my job, then my goodness, what am I supposed to do as a parent?
Well, listen, I'm with you entirely on this, but the reason why I'm asking this question is because I know there are a lot of parents out there, including some Christian parents, who are probably hearing this, at least this directly, for the first time. Can you tell us just a little bit about what you did in order to put those boundaries into place?
We are homeschoolers. We were up until the point of high school. We chose a private school. Beyond that, because of the peer group and the peer pressures that would otherwise have resulted. And coming along, we steered then towards some good literature like Why I Kiss Dating Goodbye. Not that that's 100% of the answer, but there's some good, solid principles in there.
Yeah, I appreciate so much the suggestion, Ben. That book, by the way, is by my friend Joshua Harris, a well-known book. And, you know, as you mentioned that, Ben, I'm aware of the fact that there are probably a lot of parents and teenagers and young adults out there who they don't know about that book because it may not be as talked about now as it should be. And I appreciate you raising that. Ben, thanks for your call. Thanks for your candor. That's very, very helpful. And just speaking as a parent, I have to say that it is our responsibility to put the structures and expectations in place. And that means the parents have to be far more involved in the lives of teenagers. You can't just say whatever and turn them over to a peer culture. You have to understand that peer culture produces peer activity and a peer morality. And, you know, I want my kids to have peers who share a Christian commitment. But, you know, even then, let's just be really honest, we're not going to set, say, 15, 16-year-old girls or 15, 16-year-old boys and say, we're going to trust the fact that you guys are just, you know, peer-oriented towards Christ, and thus we're not going to have to worry about supervising your activities and all the rest. That's not fair. That is not even generous to our children. If we love our children, we need to protect them from situations in which they are prematurely sexualized and prematurely facing decisions they shouldn't have to face. Understand me to say, it is an act of love. Now, I didn't say your child will see this as an act of love now. That's a different question. Your child doesn't ask for a vaccination shot either, but it's still your job to make sure they get them. You know, no child I know has ever asked for a tonsillectomy, but that's needed. No child I know has ever asked for discipline, not verbally, but you know that's what they need. That's your job. In the same sense, there are protections that we as parents must put in place because we love our children. And because we love them enough that we do not want to put them in a situation in which they are going to be facing temptation that they should not, at this stage in their lives, bear. You know, I hear from parents who talk about their teenagers who have fallen into sexual sin, and they say, I wish they had had a greater commitment. I wish they had been wiser. I wish they had held themselves to a higher standard. And I hear that, and I have to tell you, a lot of the time I'm thinking, parent, I wish you had parented. I wish you had prevented them from having to show more maturity than they were capable of showing. I wish you had protected them from having to fight, you know, the desire in a situation that they should never have had to experience. I thought what was so revealing in that interview, among other things, with Bristol Palin's, when Greta Van Susteren asked her about contraception and what happened and all this and about sexual abstinence and why she thinks it's unrealistic. And Bristol clearly thinks it's a personal question addressed to her. I don't think it was. I think in the context of the interview, I don't believe for a minute that Greta Van Susteren was asking her about what happened, you know, in the white hot heat of the intensity of that moment. I think she was talking about the general issue of adolescent sexuality. But Bristol steps back and says, well, I'm not going to go into that in any detail. But, you know, I can answer the question for her. It happened because they got themselves in a situation where sex was likely. That's the bottom line. They got themselves in a situation, and they were allowed to get themselves into a situation where sex was likely. Now, these things can happen in the most unexpected ways, and no parenting is absolutely perfect. But hear me, it is a parent's responsibility to make sure that with everything that is within us, we are protecting our children and aiming them for something higher, which is, of course, as was pointed out earlier, not just not having sex until marriage, but giving themselves to the glory of God in every dimension of their lives, understanding that marriage and sex within marriage is a part of what God has called them to, and they should expect to be held to a higher standard and to aspire to something greater. Back to Final Thoughts. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Again, my article entitled The Palin Parable can be found at albertmueller.com. You can also, of course, find much conversation about this out there on the World Wide Web. I hope it will lead to conversation where parents are found. You know, if this conversation made you uncomfortable, parent, because perhaps your children have fallen into some sexual sin, they've disappointed you, understand that no parenting is perfect, but just in an honest and straightforward and humble way, one of the best things that Christian parents can do is to say to each other, look, I think this is where I failed, this is where I succeeded, I think this is where I had good sight, this is where I wish I'd seen more. And the reality is, the bottom line in all these things is that we should encourage each other to do better than we have done ourselves and to help others in ways that, by our own experience, they might learn something. And the reality is that children can always break our hearts. That's always a possibility. In a fallen world, that's always a possibility. But the reality is that we really have a lot of influence, and with the right protections in place, we can make it very, very, very difficult for our children to break our hearts in this way. And that's just what we need to do. Once we've done all that we can do, we have to do what every parent has to do in every situation, and that is trust them to the Lord. Because at the end of the day, we can't keep our kids from getting sick, but we can certainly keep them away from where they're likely to catch an infectious disease. But at the end of the day, there's no perfect protection against disease. We have to trust them to God. We have to do all that we can do and trust God. The same thing with their education, the same thing with their physical, their spiritual health as well. So just with that word of exhortation, realize that we need to do everything we can do and encourage each other to do ever better than we've done before, and hold out a model for our kids that will not only inspire them but protect them. And we need to do so honestly. That requires us to have some conversations that are sometimes difficult but are exceedingly important. Tomorrow we're going to talk about a fascinating topic. It's one of the big topics in theology. We're going to ask the question, is God a megalomaniac? There are those who are catching on to the fact that God's greatest concern is his own glory, and he created the world for his own glory, and he redeemed sinners for his own glory. And there's some people who are saying, well, hey, if a human being did that, that would be a sign of megalomania, self-glorification. We're going to talk tomorrow about why God is not a megalomaniac, but that gets to some of the most basic issues in theology, and I guarantee you it's going to be a fun discussion, because we're going to be looking again at the infinite distinction between God and his creature, but we're also going to be looking at the hidden key to the universe, which is that God's greatest concern is his own glory. But his own glory is a generosity that is for the good of his creatures, even as it draws himself greater glory. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the Albert Miller Program. Big questions for intelligent Christians. I'll meet you tomorrow for the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.